live from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to have a lot of commentaries, and I'm going to ask you to hold calling in until you've heard them so you can give us your perspective. Our call-in number is 888-874-4888. However, that's not to be confused with people who want to call in, leave a voicemail, and then I ask our engineers in New York, please play them, and then whatever comes up, I'll try to address them. Now, that call-in voicemail line is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. And most of the people listening are listening at home in the evenings. Our archive number is 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. I was in an airport recently, and as I'm waiting on my flight, I heard my voice, and the guy beside me was listening, didn't know it was me, but he was listening to the archive of a program. So this way, wherever you're at, you can always listen to some really good broadcasting. We're going to try to squeeze in Laura Logan. Now, for 16 years, she was a multi-award-winning reporter, investigative journalist, in war zones around the world for 60 minutes. And now she's not. But she made an appearance to talk about something I felt was important, and that is Ted Koppel gave a comment on media bias. And so Mark Levin, who I think is one of the funniest guys, he is funny. I don't agree with him politically on most things, but his humor is just devastating. In any case, he allowed her an opportunity to talk. So it's her that I'm interested in hearing what she has to say. I believe you also will. Also, we managed to find a little audio clip, a video audio clip, actually, of a group of pro-vaccine top people, including Paul Offit, a professor from Baylor University. All these are top people talking about how to deal with the problem of the anti-vaxxers. And you need to hear what they have to say, what they think of you, and how they're using the media to control those people who challenge vaccines. Also, time permitting, we're going to hear from the grandfather of all vaccinology in the United States, Dr. Maurice Hillman. And it was done near the end of his life. I believe he died in 2005. And there's some very inappropriate laughter in here. You'll see what I'm talking about. But it's what he says that should really give pause to everyone who has the belief that vaccines are inherently safe, when the Supreme Court unanimously ruled they're inherently not safe. But this is the person that created more vaccines than anyone else in American history. So maybe we should revisit that. We will. You'll have a chance to hear it for yourself. So that's our program. We start with the latest on health and healing. And from the University of Sao Paulo and Para, which are both in Brazil, comes a study about anti-tumor activity of curcumin. Now, curcumin, cure, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, will help with stomach cancer. Now, we know that curcumin is widely used to impact color and flavor in food. It comes from turmeric, and that's what you get in a lot of your curry dishes. But science have discovered, after thousands of studies showing how powerful it is, that the yellow powder derived from the root of the turmeric plant can help combat and prevent stomach cancer. And that, it showed that its bioactive compounds went to work and made a big difference. And by the way, stomach cancer is very common. It's not a rare cancer. And this was published in the journal Epigenomics. So, curcumin every day, preventing stomach cancer, and also preventing a lot of destruction to your DNA, alteration of your DNA all over your body. from the University of Florence. By the way, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. If you've never been to Florence, put it on your bucket list. It's exquisite. And we have really to thank for that during a 300-year period when the de' Medici family ruled. And it was Lorenzo de' Medici who was, I would say, one of the three most important Renaissance contributors. He was one who supported Michelangelo, and Raphael, who was Michelangelo's younger idealist. But you can see in Raphael's work a lot of Michelangelo's influence. But anyhow, it was Lorenzo who said, when you're doing something that the community will, you know, the citizens all will enjoy, like a park or a city block, do it with balance, symmetry, and beauty. So he would invite in philosophers, including the most famous philosopher in the world at that time, and engineers and architects that would all sit. And once they came to an idea, then they described this to the artist. So the artist, when doing the paintings and sculptures, would all blend together. And that's why it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. In any case, this is from their university, and it shows that blueberries can protect your bones. Kale, seaweed, sesame seeds, tahini, yeah. But now, blueberries. This was just published in FEBS Open Bio, which is a very respected scientific journal. So, using cultural bone cells, these are called osteocytes, in which oxidative stress was induced by serum deprivation, they administer blueberry juice, and we know that it's just rich in polyphenols, and that helps prevent oxidative stress, induce, let's say, a programmed cell death, and reversal of factors involved in the activation of osteoclasts, which break down bone and bone reabsorption. So the juice was important. So, takeaway message, if you want stronger, healthier bones, have a cup of blueberries. And, of course, wild blueberries would be the best. And then also a new study, and again, all of the studies that I cite are all from respected institutions published in peer-reviewed journals, from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. Working out makes hydrogels perform more like muscle. Now, what does that mean? Our human skeletal muscles have a unique combination of properties that materials researchers seek for their own creations. They're strong, they're soft, they're full of water, and resistant to fatigue. And a new study by MIT researchers has found one way to give synthetic hydrogels this total package of characteristics, put them through a vigorous workout. In particular, the science mechanically trained the hydrogels by stretching them in a water bath. And just as with skeletal muscles, the reps at the gym paid off, training aligned nanofibers inside the hydrogels to produce a strong, soft, and hydrated material that resists breakdown or fatigue over thousands of repetitive movements. So, you know, it's just, this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. What this tells us is this. We're not exercising enough. We need to exercise more. And the more exercise we do, the more we train for strength and endurance, the stronger our tissues will be, and the excellent load-bearing natural tissues such as muscles and heart valves are a bioinspiration to materials researchers. So you're going to have healthier heart, healthier muscles, healthier brain, all because you did your workout. And you're going to be less fatigued. People don't exercise fatigue easily. People that exercise regularly fatigue very little. From Penn State University comes a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association showing that not drinking water can boost a kid's consumption of sugary beverages. So what does it mean? It's simple. Kids and young adults who drink little to no water throughout the day are almost always going to consume twice the amount of calories from sugary drinks than those who drink water. And of course, we know that kids shouldn't be consuming these high fructose and high phosphoric acid and artificial coloring, these soft drinks. They're not good for you. We've shown that 100 times on this program. And they're in sports drinks and sweetened fruit juices and sodas and energy drinks and sweetened teas and coffee drinks. And kids are not drinking 100% fresh juices. So, something that we should consider, because they're loading up on calories, and that's one of the reasons we're seeing an elevation in the number of younger people who are overweight. They're not exercising, and they're drinking these sugary beverages. From the Mayo Clinic comes one more confirmation, as if we needed it, that a plant-based diet can be effective in reducing heart failure risk. And this was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. So a healthy plant-based diet will lower your risk of heart failure, even if you have no heart failure in your family. And we have a lot of heart failure in the United States every year. So this is one way to help prevent that. Just go on a plant-based diet, and that's important. And I'll give a couple more here. Physical activity can offset the death risk caused by too much sitting. The University of Sydney, published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, a lot of Americans, especially older people, have lived a life where we're given misinformation. That misinformation includes sitting at a desk or sitting and working, rarely getting up except to go to the bathroom or to have a break. But we shouldn't be doing that. You should never sit for more than 2 hours. That includes on an airplane. Get up and walk up and down the aisles. Go to the inn, which is what I do, is I'll go to, the back of a plane, and then I'll just do some half squats. You know, you spread your legs to shoulder width to maintain your balance. If you need be, just put your hands on your hips or in front of you, and then just slowly go down about 6-7 inches, and then hold it, then back up. That's helping. And then go up on your toes. That's hitting the different muscles, forcing the venous flow, which is, remember, your arteries take your blood down through the body. The venous system brings it back through the veins. That helps you prevent occlusions and a heart attack or a blockage and stroke. So just get up, walk. Don't stay sitting all day long. But that will help extend your life if you do that. It's not difficult. And also from Walter and Lisa Hall Institute of Medical Research comes a study about it. A particular natural sugar found in leafy green vegetables promotes your gut health. Now, when you eat a green vegetable, it doesn't taste sweet. It's not about the taste of sweet. It's that there's a particular natural sugar in there, and that can boost the good bacteria in your intestine. And that's important. So if you're drinking a vegetable juice, you're really loading your body up to be benefited, especially the gut microbiome. And this was published in the Journal of Natural Chemical Biology. So again, all of you who've been doing this for a long period of time, good for you. You've been on the right side of health, and also you can use miso, sauerkraut, tempeh. They're all rich sources. Kimchi, K-I-M-C-H-I, it's a spicy fermented Korean dish. It's made from cabbage, full of probiotics. So these are the things you can take in to help your probiotics. I'm not going to get into it today, but I'm going to do a whole discussion on light. Physical activity reduces brain aging. This is from Boston University School of Medicine, and it talks about incremental physical activity, and even at light intensity, meaning you're not going full out, still will help your brain. And that's important, prevents brain aging. But how it does it, why it does it, and what else you can do, I'll discuss on an upcoming program. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're about 15 minutes into our program. Got a lot to share today. We're going to come right back into your questions. Please stay with us.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? Self-slipping. Nobody and me. We've got it together, baby.
I am a senior citizen, and I understand they're going to be mandatory to have vaccines, to have a person vaccinated. So what does one do if one does not want to be vaccinated? How do you go about, say, you know, not having them vaccinate you?
Okay, that is not actually what is happening. I have stated on this program that the goal of the manufacturers of vaccines is to first get all 50 states where children are mandated, they have no choice, eliminate religious exemptions, philosophical exemptions, and 99.9% of all doctors are not going to sit there and do a detailed history of a child's background to see if they have anything in the way of autoimmune disease that would prevent that. So, here's the key. Once they have succeeded in getting mandated vaccines, then they have about 200 vaccines more or less in the pipelines. The current mandated vaccines will triple, quadruple within a year because they will have won. They will have controlled the state legislatures. And behind all this is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a consortium of about, at different times, different numbers, but let's say between 150 and 250 major corporations, and they have their attorneys and their in-house representatives write bills that will help them. Then they meet at these conferences once or twice a year in exclusive, generally exclusive resorts, and they sit with your state legislator. They give this bill to the legislator, and then the legislator takes it back and introduces it as if they had created it, came out of their own brain, for you, the citizen of that state. I've seen this my whole career. And before we knew there was an Alex, we knew someone was behind the scene because you would have the same things happening in state after state after state. That was well coordinated. So, that's what they intend to do. Now, once they get the children mandated, then they're going after the adults. You can bet your life on it. They're already talking about this in California. But they want to go further. They want to make sure that there is no one talking about the dangers of vaccines or having questions about vaccines. It's already been discussed in California. That should surprise no one. And if you openly oppose vaccines, they want to make that a criminal act. Now imagine that you can't even talk as a scientist, as a physician, as a nurse, as a chemist, someone working in the field of vaccines. You would be threatened by going to jail. In Australia, that law exists now. You can spend 10 years in prison for criticizing vaccines. Just like they're trying to make laws now in the United States, if you criticize Israel or what they're doing, it becomes a hate act. And yet you could be an Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox Jew talking about what you oppose with the radical elements within Zionism, which is separate from Judaism, and you could be found guilty of a hate crime for just being critical of something that legitimately deserves to be criticized. So you have to understand the end game that they're playing, and time is on their side. They're not going anywhere. The major corporations control Congress. They control the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government. They control our entire judiciary. They control the state legislators and governors. Remember, in America today, you're not elected before you're selected. And it's that selection and grooming process and what you have to compromise to them in order for them to support you. And if they like you, if they believe that you're going to be a major spokesperson for gas hydrofracking or mandatory vaccines, the media is complicit always. It never challenges, ever, what is wrong. It was not the media who told you that weapons of mass destruction didn't exist. We did. Others did. They were completely complicit. It wasn't the media who said that we shouldn't be in Vietnam. We did. The media didn't, nor did the authority figures, until a lot of dead Vietnamese, Laos, Cambodians, Thais, and Americans. So on every major important social, political, environmental issue, the establishment has backed the one truth, and that is that they will not share their power and they won't change it. Now, what does that mean for your question? It means that sooner or later, they will come knocking. Right now, UPS is actually taking vaccines out to the public so they can vaccinate people, and they're not vaccinating children, they're vaccinating adults. Now, here's the problem you face. You face the problem that we are a complicit nation. We are intentionally avoiding the truth, which creates, by an extension, an intentional ignorance. And from that intentional ignorance, you can have a minefield of playing all forms of games on people. You line up the scientists you want to have testify why we need these life-saving vaccines, and even this clown that used to be the senator who... One of the most obnoxious human beings I've ever seen, Joe Lieberman, he says now that the measles vaccine is a national, crisis. No, it's not. No, it's not. The crisis is that 400 and plus individuals died from the vaccine, two died from measles in the last 14 years. Measles is an infection. It is not a disease. Chickenpox is an infection. It's not a disease. We've had them, and measles was gone 90% before the vaccine was even invented. So what I suggest you do is go to prn.fm, prn.fm. You'll find 52 articles on vaccines. These were all legally and academically vetted. They're accurate. You could use them in a court of law. And read up on what the problems are, and then join one of the vaccine challenging. And by the way, every single one of the 7 million plus adults who have vaccine damaged children or themselves, they were all pro-vaccine. All the leading physicians who are now challenging vaccine safety and efficacy were all pro-vaccine. The scientists the same way. All right, hope that helps you. In fact, you know what I'm going to do? This is where I want to play a little bit of a clip. So from inside the studio, let's play Achieving Vaccination Success. And I'm going to tell you to stop at different points so I can highlight what is being said.
You know, Carol's kind of saying healthcare, it kind of falls upon healthcare to try to change the mindset of these parents that are really refusing vaccines. Does the panel have any of the comments or thoughts in terms of who else might be a good resource, or who else should be really responsible for changing these parents' minds?
Other parents. I mean, the natural resource. The people talk to most are other parents and communities. Mm-hmm. Again, when Mark Zuckerberg put up a photo saying, I vaccinate my child, it generated an enormous debate.
Yes.
If each of us, when we actually vaccinate, say that, put it in the open, since over 90% of parents do get most vaccines, yeah, I think it could make a big difference.
So, Paul, if you want a thought outside of the narrow medical box, some of us have looked very briefly, I don't want to dignify it as a survey, at the curriculum in middle and high schools that deal with vaccine-preventable diseases and vaccines. First of all, it varies enormously, but for the most part, it's very modest. Now, I learned a lot when I was in middle school and high school, and there are undoubtedly many other health issues that are being taught. But I sure, if I had a magic wand, I would create a new curriculum for middle and high school kids in the health curriculum that taught a little bit about the vaccine-preventable diseases and what a vaccine is and how it works and how you have to be thoughtful about it and accepting once you have a child yourself. I think that might help, but that's a big task.
Start younger.
I could give you three.
Where their brains get mixed up.
I could give you three strategies, although Carol did put me in mind of saying you can't stay in the basement anymore until you get vaccinated, but that's a separate for adolescents who won't grow up. So I do think the religious community should be used more and brought into this battle. I think most of them are very vaccine supportive and they need to be heard. I never hear from them. I never hear them talking anywhere in any forum, any place. And I think they have moral authority. I think it's also important to try and work, if you will, with business. I was always hoping that Disneyland would have something that said, you can't go on this ride if you're below this height. And over here, you can't go on this ride if you're not vaccinated. So there are things to do with industry and business that would set messages out. Our workforce is 100% vaccinated. It's not a message I mind hearing particularly much. And when I talked about media training, I didn't mean to go on national television. What I was trying to say is you should be able to stand up at your high school assembly or in your church or at your Kiwanis Club or wherever you are and say, you know, I'm a pediatrician or I'm a doctor or I'm a pharmacist or whatever, and I think vaccines are important and here's why. You don't get that much. You just don't get it much.
Okay. Hold it there. Look where they're going with this, just so you know. This was a pro-vaccine conference, and we're going to get another clip here in a second that's really, really concerning. They're talking about going to your religious leaders. Now, mind you, what if they have members of their congregation or mosque or synagogue who are physicians that they can say, look, for the betterment of the entire community, let's make it a point that all the people in this congregation should be vaccinated. Let's have a meeting where they all get vaccinated. You know, that is easily done because authority figures are the ones that the average person, the adaptive supportive life energies, follow. Secondly, now see where they're going. You cannot not see where they're going. If you have a brain and an intellect above 7, you're going to see they're going to go after make it mandatory in the workplace that you've got to have a vaccine or you can't come to work. Just like you don't have a vaccine, you can't go into a public space, can't walk out on the street. So they're going to go there as well. Then they want every school to have an indoctrination class. And that's easy enough to do. Just have pro-vaccine literature, a pro-vaccine film, and you've got that as well. So now they're going to the schools, the middle schoolers, they'll go into colleges. So what then does it mean if you're a parent of a vaccine-injured child? What if you're a board-certified pediatrician and you vaccinated your children and they became autistic? I've filmed the person in Chicago that happened to. So now you've published in peer-reviewed literature. You're also a professor. You're a pediatrician and a professor, and your child is the victim of your own lack of understanding the lack of science and vaccines, safety and efficacy. You'll be banned. No one will want to hear what you have to say. So then merely speaking out, then it will be considered a hate crime to talk about vaccines. And if they can talk about vaccines and everybody must be on board, then we're back to being a completely authoritarian state where it's not just a matter of having our country run by sociopaths, which we have for a long time, and corporate leaders who are sociopaths, which they are. But it's a matter of we have no choice. So it's going to come down to that, and it's accelerating at such a pace. We're looking at this happening in the next probably 2 years. Our final person I save for last, listen to what this professor has to say about what the problem with vaccines are and how to get around it.
I'm complaining because the average pediatrician or internist has 10 minutes for a visit, and you want to have them go get media trained? Excuse me.
Well, some, but
the fight, the battle is being fought one family, one physician, one health center. That's why we're doing as well as we are. We're talking about the minority and strategies against the minority. So I have the solution. Every study published in the last 5 years, when you look at vaccine refusers, I'm not talking about, well, hesitants, most of them we can talk into coming to terms, but refusers. We'll just get rid of all the whites in the United States because...
Right there. What if any other group had said that? What if Barack Obama said it, or what if Trump said it? Just get rid of the whites in the United States. What a racist statement. What a bigoted statement. Because maybe there's some whites, as there's some blacks and Latinos and people from other cultures that choose to research the science. The one group of women who are least likely to vaccinate are the women PhDs at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. Very bright people. And they started to see what was wrong with other persons, and they did their homework because they know how to do homework. Now they become a threat. So your education level, your interest in a topic is a weapon to be used against you. So the person that wants to ask questions becomes an enemy of the state. How in this day and age could someone get away at a conference of pro-vaccine people saying, get rid of whites? But she did. You heard her. We have the whole discussion. So I just wanted you to hear that. Let's take another question.
Is how do we wean ourselves off of pharmaceuticals or SSRI drugs? For example, if we're taking, or even blood pressure medicine. I understand that if we stop taking a lot of these medicines that we've been accustomed to taking for some time, that the result can be disastrous. So again, how do we wean ourselves off of these properly?
Okay. You don't. It would be extremely reckless and irresponsible to simply stop taking a medication. You have to do it gradually. And with the SSRIs that you mentioned, like Paxil, Prozac, and Effexor, those might take as long as a year. You should be in the hands of holistic psychiatrists like Peter Bregan or Michael Schachter, people who know the body biochemistry. I would suggest you get a name of a holistic psychiatrist in the Orthomolecular Psychiatry Association or the Orthomolecular Foundation, which was founded by Dr. Abram Hoffer and Linus Pauling. I was also publishing early on with them, and I knew them both. So get a qualified person to help wean you off of any medication and then replace it with something that I'm assuming that you feel would be better and natural. There are lots of ways to thin the blood. There's no reason. I've told you all these decades, shouldn't, you know, these aspirins were increasing your risk of having heart attacks, though they were reducing your risk of stroke, because the aspirins and others were causing intestinal bleeding. They were destroying folic acid, B12, B6, and vitamin C in the body, and that raised homocysteine levels. And when homocysteine levels go up, your risk of a heart attack increases. So you take one thing to reduce the clotting, or excuse me, reduce the clumping, which it does. But on the other hand, vitamin C could do that. Vitamin E could do it. Green juices could do it. The healthy plant-based diet can do it. But you're never told that. You're never told that there is a different paradigm. You're only told one, because in our society, only one truth is ever allowed. Now, from yesterday's program, and I hope you had a chance to hear it. If you didn't, go to the archives and listen. We did a two-hour special on Earth Day. And about 2 hours after that, we had a letter that came up on Facebook. And Richard Gale is going to read you just a sentence out of that. But it's in Greta's own words. And I mentioned her yesterday. Here's a clip of what I actually said. It's only about a minute and a half long. Over the weekend, Jesse, who runs the Progressive Radio Network in our New York offices, sent me an email. And the email talked about how this Greta Thunberg, this dynamic new face for the New Green movement, was actually a new green neoliberal movement. And then it was broken down into five chapters, each one documenting that behind this young girl, who is clearly dynamic, committed, and sincere, ethical, and honest, so you have to separate out what she is saying, which I agree with and support fully, that the environment is in crisis and we have to get behind it now, that's all legitimate, from the organization that is pushing all this. All right, 2 hours later, after I said that, and it probably was just a coincidence, Greta wrote on her Facebook, and Richard Gale's here because he dug into that group behind what the movement is, trying to draw all the people into the green movement. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary. Yeah, did you have a question? Want me to address or
address it? Yes.
Yeah. Well, the main group that she's become associated with, although she has herself in her Facebook statement that she made, she sounds like she's very concerned. She wants to convince people she's not being hijacked by any interested group. She made that very clear in one of her TED Talks as well. And in her recent statement that she gave to the rebellion, the Extinction Rebellion in the UK, where she is now, that having Asperger's, she made kind of a claim. She said that she has a gift. She can see through the BS of other people, and she doesn't. This is her own thing. When she started her protest and just sitting out in front of the Swedish Parliament just by herself, it was just this lone girl just sitting there with her placard, sighing, making reference to climate change. But there was an organization called We Don't Have Time, Swedish group, that kind of took advantage of this, and they used it for their own advertising purposes. They were the ones that did the initial photos, seeing her there and just sitting alone in front of the Swedish Parliament, and they made those photos viral, and then other people would start to show up, and it kind of took off from there. So this group, We Don't Have Time, they have a statement. Their CEO made the statement that their goal is to become one of the biggest players on the internet. It is crowdfunded, but they do have they have partners that they work on. One is Al Gore's organization that's called the Climate Reality Project. That's Al Gore's project. All the people who are on the board of this and the founders of this group are, they've been institutional investors. The CEO in particular has been a communications consultant for the financial services in the Swedish economic industry. They purport to have solutions for climate change, but it's these are all the same solutions that Al Gore proposes, and some that you might find, like with Bill McKibben's 350 org, which are all fossil fuel-based. They're not really looking at issues around equity, improving living conditions in other parts of the world, such as Greta has mentioned in some of her talks, and what more the grassroots movement organizations are doing. They are... I could just say concerning the Al Gore's view is that Al Gore believes in what are called carbon offsets. And this is a, well, there's a professor, Kevin Anderson, University of Manchester, who happens to be Greta's climate change advisor. He's the one who kind of keeps her updated on the scientific findings, because she has a very keen scientific mind, seems to really grapple, be able to grasp the scientific findings much better than the average person does. And he is a large, big opponent, I discovered, of these environmental organizations like the Sierra Club, Al Gore's organization, the 350 Org. He calls that these carbon offsets as being worse than doing nothing. What you're basically doing is, rather than just getting off the CO2 on your own, you're basically just paying somebody to do it for you. That's what this that does. And this is why Al Gore, with all the criticism of Al Gore concerning his high energy consumption, he's been criticized as being a hypocrite for this, because in 1 year his home guzzles 21 years of an average family's use of energy. He had one monthly bill had was equivalent to 34 months of an average family. His swimming pool alone can power 6 homes a year. But what Gore says is, well, I purchased these carbon offsets.
All right, first off, it's all a fraud. It's a complete, total fraud. If you want to reduce the impact of global warming from industrialization, then you have to do 3 things. One, you have to give up the primary sources of the polluting structure, such as how steel is made and how cars are made and how appliances are made, because they're all involved 100% in manufacturing these products from polluting and non-renewable resources, such as coal and gas hydrofracking and oil or nuclear. And a lot of these environmental groups support nuclear, as does Al Gore. But it means that if you're rich enough, you continue polluting. You simply pay a carbon tax, sometimes to a government, and or different countries, depending upon how much they pollute, can pay larger amounts. So you don't stop polluting. You just paid a tax on it. That's what it comes down to, as if somehow the government, having more tax money, is suddenly going to use that tax money in a good way to help the poor, to promote geothermal, promote wave power, promote an educational program to show the benefits of a plant-based diet and the dangers of the current meat and dairy-based diet. None of the above is going to happen. All that's going to happen is China's going to continue, Al Gore's going to continue, and America's going to continue in this mad race for profits. And now the big deal is, let's profit off the green movement. And that's why I challenged Al Gore. Not because he's wrong when it comes to the oceans rising, but because he's not an example of anything that I respect as a human being or an environmental leader. But then again, I don't respect almost anybody within the movement, because you and I both know that they're frauds or they're liars, they're opportunists. And it's like NGOs, non-governmental organizations. They are awash in Haiti. Look at Haiti's environmental degradation. It's the poorest nation in the Caribbean. Haiti is the Yemen, but of the Western Hemisphere. $13 to $14 billion the Clintons and Bush brought in. None of it went to Haiti, piddling pennies. But their friends that gave a lot of money, suddenly they got big new factories in a place on the island that didn't get hit by the earthquakes. Everything's a fraud with these people. So the real environmentalists who are going to help the future are people such as Greta, because they're honest. Greta Thunberg is honest. And here's what she says in this Facebook quote. I was briefly a youth advisor for the board of the nonprofit foundation We Don't Have Time. It turns out they use my name as part of another branch of their organization that is a startup business. They have admitted clearly that they did so without the knowledge of me or my family. I no longer have any connection to We Don't Have Time, nor does anyone in my family. They have deeply apologized for what has happened and I've accepted their apology. That was 2 hours after we talked about We Don't Have Time on yesterday's program and how, look at what they're doing to someone like her, a young idealist. And by the way, she writes all of her own script. Everything you see her reading before the, you know, the parliament yesterday, where she was not kind to the parliament, or at Davis, where she was not kind to these punks that go to Davis, and they're all punks that go to Davis. We should deplore Davos and the sociopaths that meet there flying in on their private jets, making their money without any question about the ethics of what was sacrificed when they made their money, as if somehow they're smart enough to tell us what we should be doing, and virtue shaming everyone else as if somehow they are high up on a moral ladder. God, these people, I put everyone that attends Davos at the level of a gangster, because that's what they are. They're just legally doing it. Anyhow, she backed away from this. So let me just put it on the record. I do not support, will I ever support, an organization like We Don't Have Time. You know, you're just another Al Gore wannabe. And I think one Al Gore and his unmitigated greed and manipulation of his environmental information is enough. Thank you, Richard. Now let's go to a clip. I want to play this. I want to get it in, at least some of it. Because, wait, you know what I'm going to do? Yeah, we can get enough. No, I'm just looking at the time. We won't have enough time to get it in for you to give your comments. I'm going to save this clip for tomorrow, because I think that what this person has to say, this Laura Logan, is good. And because she's challenging all the media and all the media bias, and we need to hear this. Instead, I'm going to play you a little bit of this, and then if you have some statements on it, I'll save a minute or two at the end so you can call in and give it. This is the man who created the most vaccines in American history, and just listen to him in his own words.
Vaccine expert, Dr. Maurice Hilleman, chief of the Merck Pharmaceutical Company's vaccine division, relay this problem he was having with imported monkeys. He best explains the origin of AIDS.
Penny store. Instead, he went on to pioneer more breakthroughs in vaccine research.
I was going to develop vaccines. And we had wild viruses in those days. Remember the wild monkey kidney viruses and so forth. And I finally, after 6 months, gave up. I said that you cannot develop vaccines with these damn monkeys. We're finished. And if I can't do something about it, I'm going to quit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try it. Mm-hmm. So I went down to see Bill Mann at the zoo in Washington, D.C. And I told Bill Mann, I said, look, I got a problem. I don't know what the hell to do. Bill Mann is a real bright guy. I said, these lousy monkeys are picking it up, you know, while being stored in the airports in transit at these loading, offloading, loading. He said, very simple. He said, you go ahead, get your monkeys out of West Africa, get the African green, bring them into Madrid, unload them there. There are no other traffic through there for animals. Fly them into Philadelphia, pick them up. Or fly them into New York and pick them up right off the airplane. So I brought African greens, and I didn't know we were importing AIDS virus at the time.
And it was you who introduced AIDS virus to the country. It was you who introduced AIDS virus to the country. It was you who introduced AIDS virus to the country.
Now we go.
Became real story.
Became real story.
Became real story.
Convert will do to Velma vaccine. Convert will do to Velma vaccine. Convert will do to Velma vaccine.
So what he did, he brought in, I mean, we brought in those monkeys. Now we had those. And this was the solution. Because those monkeys didn't have the wild viruses. But we had all
Wait,
of these.
Why didn't the greens have the wild viruses since they came from
because
Africa?
Because they weren't being infected in these group holding things with all the other 40 different viruses.
But they had the ones they brought from the jungle, though.
Yeah, they had those, but there were relatively few. What you do is you have a gang housing, you're going to have an epidemic transmission of infection in a confined space.
Oh, is that the problem?
So, anyway, the greens came in. Now we had these, and then we're taking our seed stocks to clean them up, and God, now I'm discovering new viruses. So I said, shoot, priest. Well, I got an invitation from the Sister Kinney Foundation, you know, which was the opposing foundation, and that was the live virus.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they had jumped on Sabin's bandwagon. Mm-hmm. And they had asked me to come down and give a talk at the Sister Kinney Foundation meeting. And I said, it was an international meeting. I said, God, what am I going to talk about? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about the detection of non-detectable viruses as a topic.
There were those who didn't want a live virus vaccine. They concentrated. National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis
has got to be in vaccines. And it's got to be in Sabin's vaccine, so I quickly tested it. Sure enough, it was in there.
And I'll be damned.
So now, so I go ahead and...
So you just took stocks of Sabin's vaccine off the shelf here at Merck?
Yeah, well, that had not been made at Merck. It was made at Merck.
You were making it for Sabin at this point?
Yeah, it was made before I came.
Yeah, but at this point, Sabin is still just doing these massive field trials.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In Russia and so forth. So I go down, I talked about the detection of non-detectable viruses. And I told Albert...
But at this point, Sabin is still just doing these massive field trials.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In Russia and so forth. So I go down... I talked about the detection of non-detectable viruses. And I told Albert, I said, listen, Albert, I said, you know, you and I are good friends. But I said, I'm gonna go down there and you're going to get upset. I'm going to talk about a virus that's in your vaccine. Now, you're going to get rid of the virus. Don't worry about it. You're going to get rid of it. But, so, of course, Albert was very upset with me.
And what did he say?
Well, he said basically that this is just another obfuscation that is going to upset vaccines. And I said, well, you know, you're absolutely right. But I said, we have a new era here. We have a new era of a detection. And the important thing is to get rid of these viruses.
Why would he call it an obfuscation if it was a virus that was contaminating vaccines?
Well, no, because, there are 40 different viruses in these vaccines anyway that we were inactivating. And...
But you weren't inactivating the kids, though.
That's correct. No, that's right. But yellow fever vaccine had leukemia virus in it, and, you know, this is in the days of very crude science. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I went down and talked to him, and Albert said, well, why are you concerned about it? I said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, I have a feeling in my bones that this virus is different. I don't know why to tell you this, but I've been around biology a long time. I just think this virus may have some long-term effects.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what? I said, well, cancer.
I love it. Go ahead.
No. I said, Albert, I said, you probably think I'm nuts, but I just have that feeling. Well, in the meantime, we had taken this virus and put it into hamsters.
Uh-huh.
So we had this meeting, and that was sort of the topic of the day, and the jokes that were going around was, gee, we would win the Olympics because the Russians would all be loaded down with tumors. This is where the vaccine was being tested. This was
tumors. Right.
So, and it really destroyed the meeting. You know, it was a big international.
Yeah, right.
So it was sort of a topic. No. Anyway.
Okay, we only have 2 minutes to go. Here's what they found. He found that all those hamsters got cancer, and the formaldehyde that was used did not deactivate the SV40 virus, simian virus 40. Many of you who've listened to this program for decades will remember Dr. Eva Sneed. She was the principal physician in the United States who came on my program multiple times to talk about the SV40 virus. It is estimated that over 60 million Americans were vaccinated with the SV40 vaccine intact in the vaccines, because later, about 20, 30, 40 years later, as tumors began to appear, tumors in people that had no risk factors for cancer, the SV40 antibodies were in the tumors, showing it was the SV40 virus. And he said how crude it was back then. It's equally as crude today. It's alchemy. It has no basis in real science. But there I want you to hear, and completely inappropriate humor of laughing at things when you're dealing with diseases, you're dealing with people's lives, and you're seeing that they couldn't get the viruses out, but the public was never told that the viruses were in. And the person that would intercede a couple times was Sabin. And we know what kind of disaster that ended up happening after his was introduced. So I just wanted to share that with you. So the next time someone says that they know everything about vaccines and they're safe and effective and just take your damn vaccines, just remember there are people like this, the person that created these vaccines, who knowingly went out there and allowed an SV40 virus that was not inactivated, because a part of the conversation later was they were not killing these SV40 viruses throughout with formaldehyde. And that's why a lot of people today are dead, because they trusted. And we have 7 million Americans today who are not believed, not trusted, don't want to hear their stories anywhere in the media. And that's a subject that we will take on an upcoming program. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.